And you know, we're in the period of Judges, so we have our 15-word outline of the Judges, right? Right? All right. If I can smile, you can too. So we have our 15-word outline of the Judges. Let's say that together. You ready? Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Gideon, Abimelech, Tola, Jer, Jephthah, Ibzan, Elon, Abdon, Samson, Eli, Samuel. All right. So Bob, in his book, divides those into the early Judges and then the later Judges. So today we're kind of transitioning to the later Judges. And I think one of the key things that kind of marks that transition is the oppression of the Philistines. Now, we know Shamgar, his enemy is listed as the Philistines. But beyond that, the Philistines aren't seen so much as a major oppressing factor in the period of the Judges. So who was Othniel's enemy? Anyone remember? Cushan-Rishathaim from Mesopotamia. Okay, remember I pointed out a week ago that it'd be a good idea to not only know the names of the judges, but kind of the goal is to be able to tell the stories, have an outline of the period. You'd need to know who the enemy of each judge is as well. So Othniel was Cushan-Rishathaim. Ehud, who was his enemy? I heard someone say it. The Moabites, right? Eglon. King of the Moabites, all right? Yeah, everybody can pipe in, that'd be good. Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, I've already given that one to you. So all you had to do was be here this morning and you know who Shamgar's enemy is. Philistines, all right, good. And I never go to the next one. Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar. Deborah. Who was Deborah's enemy? The Canaanites, and do you remember the portion of the land where that happened? North, south, east, west, Gilead. It was in the north, wasn't it? Up near the Sea of Galilee in a town called Hazor. Does that sound about right? And Jabin, right, was the king's name. So Deborah and then Gideon. Who was Gideon's enemy, the oppressor in the days of Gideon? Midianites, right? And last time, Freddie kind of tied up Gideon for you and then talked to you a bit about Abimelech. And you remember Abimelech wasn't really a judge at all, kind of a self-appointed king, if you will. He just a self-appointed ruler. And his enemy was who? Who did he fight against? Men of Shechem, is that right? Did I get it right? The men of Shechem? And I wasn't even here Wednesday. I mean, the men of Shechem, all right? And that was, and you remember, and again, Abimelech was ruthless. Killed his 70 brothers, right? Just ruthless. And his death was a very dishonorable death. Does anyone remember briefly how Abimelech died? As he was attacking the tower, right? And then a woman dropped a stone on his head. And then he survived that initially and asked for one of his men to kill him so it wouldn't be said that a woman had killed him. And the man did that. But still a very dishonorable way to die. So that was Abimelech. Then after Abimelech, we have Tola. All right, Tola, we're not really told who his enemy is. I'm not told much about Tola at all, except for that he is the son of Puah. We're told what tribe he's from. He's from Issachar. He lived in Shamir in the hill country of Ephraim. It's a little odd, isn't it, that he would be of the tribe of Issachar but not living in his land. That's not the first time we've seen that, is it? We've seen folks from one tribe who made their headquarters in another part of the land. That's not the first time. And we're told that he judged 23 years. Tola did. So the hill country of Ephraim, we all would know would be here, somewhere between probably Bethel and Shiloh. This would be the hill country of Ephraim. Right? And so he was from the tribe of Issachar, which would have initially inherited this part of the land. But a lot's happened. Over the years, right? There's been a lot of battles that have gone on, so it would seem reasonable that they would move from one tribe to the other. But that's Tola. Not a lot about him. That's easy enough. Jer. So Jer is the first judge we have mentioned who's from the east side of the Jordan. So anytime you see that word Gilead, just kind of keep that in mind that means east side of the Jordan. Gilead. So a lot of times you'll hear a city named such and such Gilead. And that means the one that's on the east side of the Jordan. Probably the most famous example would be Ramoth Gilead. It's over on the east side of the Jordan. And we'll look at that a little bit later on. So Jair was from Gilead. He judged for 22 years. And he had 30 sons who rode on 30 donkeys and controlled 30 cities. So that's really about what we know about Jair. About Jair as well. One of the things that to understand about that is, why would we be told that little fact? And it would be, the emphasis would be that he was rich. Anyone who had the colt of a donkey and could ride on that would be considered a rich person. So Jair was rich, and that's kind of the point being made. And these cities, these 30 cities that he controlled, they were in Gilead, and they were called Havoth-Jair. And Bob has some good comments in his book, and he points out that this is not the same Jair that's mentioned in Numbers 32 and verse 41, or Deuteronomy 3 and verse 14. All right. Now, can anyone just think off the top of their heads, maybe you haven't read what Bob said, but can you think off the top of your head why it would be impossible for this Jair to be the same Jair mentioned in Deuteronomy or Numbers? Yeah, too much time has passed, hasn't it, Charles? Way too much time. Remember, we looked a few lessons back about how long the period of the judges was. Around 300 years or so is what we came up, 350 maybe. So here, and if you look back over the judges we've covered, you know, there's just a lot of time has passed. Even if there's some overlap, a lot of time has passed. And then when we get into Jephthah here in just a moment, he's going to give us a nice round figure that it was 300 years ago when this happened. When they conquered the east side of the Jordan. Jephthah's going to give us that number. And I believe he's using a round number, but it's probably very, very close to the actual number. So it's been a long, long time, way too long for this to have been the same man who was given some things. The thing that makes it confusing is that, let's look at those passages real quick. In Numbers 32, and I saw several of you turning there, and Deuteronomy 3 and verse 14 is basically a restatement of the same thing in Numbers 32 and verse 41. And it says, "Also Jair the son of Manasseh went and took small towns and called them Havoth-Jair." Right? So he was the son of Manasseh, so it would have been he was of that tribe of Manasseh, and he took those cities called Havoth-Jair. So the thing that would make that confusing is, A, his name is Jair. He lived on the east side of the Jordan. Where's this Jair from? The east side of the Jordan, right? And he had cities that were called Havoth-Jair. Well, the word Havoth just means cities of. So if there were a prominent, famous person who owned cities, it would be Havoth, and then that person's name. So Havoth-Jair. And so again, it just so happens that 300 years later, there was another Jair who lived on the east side of the Jordan who had cities that he controlled. Havoth-Jair. So let's look at where those were. The best guess is right here. You'll see this is the Yarmouk River flowing into the Jordan. Just south of the Yarmouk River in this region, there would have been some 30 cities, and those would have been called Havoth-Jair. Again, we're not told who Jair's enemy is, just that we're given the information to deduce that he was a wealthy man and controlled these cities. And he lived on the east side of the Jordan. Questions? All right. Next judge. We don't get there just quite yet, do we? We're told about the cycle. Remember the cycle that we've covered again and again, where that Israel will sin. God, because of their sin, will stop protecting them and allow their enemy to come in and oppress them. Israel recognizes their plight. They'll cry out to God. They'll repent. Then God will raise up a judge to deliver them. There'll be peace for a while, and then they go right back to sinning again. So this is where we are. Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. And one of the things that just caught my eye, I don't know if it's terribly important or not, but just the list of gods that they served at this time. The list is so broad, and I don't remember seeing a list this broad. Oftentimes it's just the Baal and the Ashtaroth is what we'll hear. But here, the Baal and Ashtaroth are gods they're serving. Also says they're serving the gods of Syria, which would have been to the north of Israel. The god of Sidon, which would have been on the Phoenician plain there. The gods of Moab, down to the south. the gods of Ammon off to the east, and the gods of the Philistines. So, and I think the point being made there is that they were willing to serve any god in the world except Jehovah. I think that's the point that's being made by that long list of gods that they're serving. They served basically all the gods, anything except Jehovah. And as a result, God, and look in Judges chapter 10, and notice verse 7. So the anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and He sold them into the hands of the Philistines and into the hands of the people of Ammon. So we're not told much about the oppression of the Philistines at this time, just that it began. And then we're told about the people of Ammon as well. And the story, Jephthah focuses on the people of Ammon. So, and again, Bob gives a good explanation here that most likely what's going on is that there's oppression that's overlapping. The Philistines are oppressing them, and the Ammonites are oppressing them from the east. Now, this story focuses on the Ammonite oppression, and the setting of this story happens to be over on the east side of the Jordan. And that would make sense, that the Ammonites would oppress from the east. And so that most of the story would come a little later on. We're setting up the stage for some judges that are coming later that are going to be at war against the Philistines, delivering Israel from the Philistines. So God gave them over. The Ammonites and the Philistines began to oppress. And then the story of Jephthah does center on this Ammonite oppression. And they began oppressing Israel there in Gilead. Sorry about that. They began oppressing them there in Gilead. And one of the another interesting thing is in this dialogue between Israel and God, they're asking for God's deliverance, and it's a really, I find, an interesting thing that God says, and it gets right to, I think, the heart of when someone forsakes God and comes back, and the heart of false repentance. Is, you know, they've been oppressed by the Ammonites here specifically, and they're asking God for help. And God says, look, I delivered you from the Egyptians. I delivered you from... And He goes through this list of peoples that He had delivered them from. The Amalekites, the Maonites, which probably is the Midianites. So very recently in their memory. And yet you've abandoned Me and served other gods, so I'm not going to deliver you anymore. And then He says, tell you what, why don't you do this? Why don't you call on those other gods and see if they'll deliver you from the hand of Ammon? And so it's when things were peaceful and they turned to those gods, you know, now that hasn't worked out so well, they're asking God. It's almost like we've got nowhere else to turn. And so that's, I think, at the center of false repentance. Now, God puts them to the test and they pass it. But I think that's oftentimes we're sorry that we have consequences for our sin, but not really sorry for our sin. I think that's oftentimes what happens to us. We want the blessings, but the actual effort of repentance and putting away the things we've been doing is a little more than we're willing to give. So God puts them to the test of that. And He says, you know, why are you calling out to Me? Call out to the other gods. Let them save you. And they confess their sin. And they even asked, you know, do whatever seems good to you. And they did back it up to show that, okay, they are ready at this time to serve God. And they put away their gods. So the oppression from the Ammonites is interesting in that, you know, it begins in Gilead. And I think the next slide is a map. No, it's not. The next one is. So it begins in Gilead. Now, you remember, the Ammonites are off here to the east. And that's where the Ammonites were. The kind of western border of the Arabian Sea is where the Ammonites were, off to the east of this land. Now, at one time, they had probably controlled some of this land. Likewise with the Moabites, down to the south. And they had at one time probably controlled some of that land. You'll remember when Moses was giving his speeches in Deuteronomy. What's the setting? Do you remember what the Bible calls that place? The plains of what? Plains of Moab, right? So that was land that God had given to to Moab and Ammon, who were kinsfolk of Israel, the sons of Lot. So that land had been given. And that's interesting because we're going to get to that in just a moment when Jephthah is discussing this with the Ammonites. You know, he reasons with them before he begins to go to war with them. So Israel confesses their sins. They put away their God. God is moved by mercy to help them. And one of the things pointed out is that the Ammonites, while they began the oppression in Gilead, they didn't stop there. They even went across the Jordan and went into the tribes, the land that belonged to Judah, the land that belonged to Benjamin and Ephraim. So this oppression was severe coming from the east and beyond just the region of Gilead where that oppression was. And so now we have the two encampments, the Ammonites and the Israelites, both encamped on the east side of the Jordan. So let's take a look at that. So here's the land of Gilead. We're not told exactly where the Ammonites were camped. Probably somewhere east of Mizpah. It's just a guess on my part. But Mizpah is a city, and we've run across that city. Now keep in mind that there is also a Mizpah on the west side of the Jordan. I think the Bible makes it very, very clear that the setting of this story is not this Mizpah that's here in the hill country of Ephraim. There is one there. It's actually more, in the hill country of Ephraim, Benjamin, in that area, just due north of Jerusalem. There's another Mizpah that comes up later in the Old Testament story. But this Mizpah is over on the east side, so we might call it Mizpah Gilead, though I don't know the Bible ever calls it that. But this Mizpah, we've run into this Mizpah before. Does anyone remember another story that happened in Mizpah there in Gilead? Jacob and Laban, does that ring a bell? They parted their ways in Mizpah. And there's also Mizpah's near to Penuel and some other. So some interesting stories happened in the time of Jacob here in the region of Gilead. So this Mizpah is where that Israel is camped, and the Ammonites are camped also in Gilead. All right, so then the Bible gives us a little bit of background of Jephthah. Jephthah is the son of Gilead. Now, this would not be the same Gilead for which the land would be named. It just would happen to be a man named Gilead who Jephthah was the son of. Because this land was known as Gilead long before the days of Jephthah or his father. But his father's name was Gilead, and he was the son of Gilead by a harlot. But Gilead had other sons by his wife. And the brothers of Jephthah did not like that Jephthah was the son of a harlot, and they drove him out. He was the son of another woman. They drove him out because they didn't want him to have any part of the inheritance that was that belonged to them. So that's why they had driven him out. And so he went to the region of Tob. I'm guessing I'm pronouncing that right. And Tob would have been up here, kind of near to where Havoth-Jair was. You remember Havoth-Jair here, just south of the Yarmouk. But over to the east of that, kind of northeast of Ramoth-Gilead, is where Tob was. And it was just an area, a region. And you'll notice that where's Israel camped? Here in Mizpah. So Jephthah was driven out a pretty good ways away from, while he's still technically in the region of Gilead on the east side of the Jordan, he's still a pretty good ways away from his brothers there in the region of Mizpah. So what he did in Tob is that he had worthless men, raiders, he hired those people and they would go out on raids. So he was a brave man, a warrior, if you will, a good leader at the least. And so he hired these worthless men and he would go out on raids. Now that Israel's in trouble and the family of Gilead's in trouble, what are they going to do? Hey, our brother's pretty good at fighting battles and taking things, so let's see if he can come help us. So they call to Jephthah to see if he'll come help them. Men of Gilead do, and Jephthah refuses. Not going to do that. Remember, you sent me away. You ran me off. You didn't want me to be part of this. And now you want me to come back now that you're in trouble? It's kind of similar to what God said to Israel, isn't it? now that you've served these other gods and now you need me, you want me to come help? Jephthah says, at least I noticed that parallel in my study. He says, now that you're in trouble, you want me to come and help you? And so he initially refuses. Don't you hate me and when you drove me away? And then why are you calling on me now when you're in trouble? And they answered and said, we need you to go with us, to go to war against the Ammonites. And the deal Jephthah makes is, if I come back and I go and fight against the Ammonites and I win, will you truly make me your leader? That's what Jephthah requests. And again, they make an oath, they make an agreement that that's indeed what will happen. And based on that, Jephthah, he agrees. At first he refuses, but based on that, he agrees. And they went back to Mizpah, and they spoke this agreement before the Lord, making it really almost like a covenant, an official agreement between the men of Gilead and Jephthah that he will be indeed the leader. So as the leader, the first thing he does is he goes and he really is going to lead the Israelites against the Ammonites. And so the first thing he does is begin negotiating with them. It's a very interesting negotiation where he's trying to reason with the Ammonites, reminding them of the history. Now, what is the beef the Ammonites have? What's their claim? Why are they saying, hey, we're coming in to get you. We're coming in to go to war with you. Why are they in camp? And Jephthah asked them that. What's the Ammonites' response? Anyone remember? Kind of the same reason why they fight today over there, isn't it? Yeah, that's our land. You came in and you took our land, didn't you? You came in and took our land. And so we're going to battle against you to take it back. Now, is that true? Had Israel taken land from the Ammonites? No, they had not, right? They had not done that at all. Now, was this land, did it belong to the Ammonites ever? Probably, yeah. Probably it did. So it did belong to them at some point in time. But was it Israel who took it away from them? When Israel comes to this land, now look at the map where we are. Here we are in Mizpah, and so the Ammonites are coming in to take this land. So Moab and Ammon had been given this land on the east side of the Jordan. But when do we see Israel coming into that land and God saying, don't take that land. It's not yours. That's not the land I've given you. Do you remember when they were wandering in the wilderness, coming up on the east side of the Jordan, and they ask Edom, can we pass by or pass through your land? Edom said no. Israel honored that request. And instead of passing through Edom, you may remember the extended geography of that nice long valley that went all the way down to the Gulf of Aqaba there at the Red Sea. And so they came up that valley is called the Araba, very rugged, dry terrain there. And they came up that instead of going through Edom. It would have been much easier to go through Edom. And in that land's where the story of the fiery serpents and some other things happen. So they didn't pass through Edom. They requested the same thing from Moab. Moab denied permission. So they skirted around the east side of Moab as well, stayed out of Moab's land. And then they come up here and they even ask, now who was king here in this part of the land at that time? Was it Ammon? Was it an Ammonite who was king? No, who was king? Sihon? And he was king of Heshbon, which was this land, you know, really up in here, where their camp, the land that included Mizpah. And then next was Bashan, king of Bashan, off to the north. And they ask Sihon, can we pass through your land? Intending to do so peacefully. But what did Sihon do? Sihon started it, didn't he? Sihon came out to go to war against Israel. And so Israel went to war. And what'd they do? Just wiped them out, annihilated them. So they took the land, for sure. Israel did take this land by force. But did they take it from Ammon? No. And that's the point Jephthah's making. So you need to have that understanding of history. And I think it's admirable of Jephthah that he had this knowledge of the history as well. He knew what had happened. And he told them, Israel did not take this land from you. And then he kind of chides them. It's interesting what he says. Tell you what, we're going to take the land that our God has given us, Jehovah, that He's given us. why don't you go and be satisfied with the land that Chemosh gives you, your God? Be satisfied with that. That's very clever. I really like the way that Jephthah words that to them. Whatever Chemosh gives you, take it. Very, very fascinating dialogue between Jephthah and the Ammonites. And again, the interesting thing there is that, you know, he quotes from Numbers, the history from Numbers. And it's almost word for word what he quotes there. And it'd be a very good exercise to look that up and just note what really happened and how accurately Jephthah restates that history. And it's almost word for word. And the other thing that's, again, like I say, it's admirable that Jephthah knew that. But you'll note that the Ammonites were not persuaded. They were not persuaded at all by this. And one of the things that Bob points out in his book about this is that there are a number of folks, skeptics, who suggest that the Pentateuch, you know, the five books of Moses, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, that those books were not really written by Moses, that they were written much, much later. And this, I think, is very good evidence to the contrary. Because Jephthah basically quotes verbatim from this book. So that you know, this story. So that indicates that, A, it was already written, and that Israel had it for some 300 years or so. And again, this is where Jephthah points out that, hey, this was about 300 years ago that this happened. And verse 26 is where that is. He says to, again, he's talking to Ammon, and he says, while Israel dwelt in Heshbon, and its villages in Aroer, and its villages in all the cities along the banks of the Arnon, for 300 years, why did you not recover them within that time? So the point that Jephthah's making is, why are you going to war right now with Israel? Why now? You know, why didn't you do this sooner? We've been here for 300 years. First off, he says, we didn't take it from you. We took it from the Amorites who were there. And, you know, I'll say that that's one thing to kind of be aware of, because those two words are very similar. And I bet I spent maybe 2 years of my life thinking that Sihon was king of the Ammonites, just because I read it quickly. And Sihon was king of the Amorites. So don't let... that's an important point, because it comes up later. So don't get confused by that. The Amorites and the Ammonites are not the same. And I've probably made that slip of the tongue since then, but I know better now. If I do it now, it's a slip of the tongue. But I probably spent a good 2 years of my life thinking that until a little further study, and I realized, wait, that can't be the same. The Amorites were in no way related to the Israelites. And God did give the land that the Amorites had to Israel. Whereas the Ammonites, there was relationship through Lot to the Israelites. And God had given Ammon a portion of the land, and Israel was not allowed to take that from them. And then the question he asks the Ammonites is, are you any better than Balak, the son of Zippor, the king of Moab? Did he ever strive against Israel? Did he ever fight against them? Wait a minute. I thought Balak did some things. What did Balak do? Does anyone remember? What did he do? Yeah, he brought Balaam to curse the Israelites. So he definitely wanted the Israelites out of that land, didn't he? And he was concerned, and really, he had no reason to be concerned, because God had forbidden them from taking Moab. But he was concerned because they had defeated Sihon and Og, and he sent Balaam to go and curse them. And I think the point there is that, look, Balak tried to take the land, or tried to drive Israel out, and Balak was unsuccessful. He didn't go to war. There's no record of a war between Moab and Israel during this time, in the days of Balak. It was more of an underhanded attempt, right? It was more of almost a mystic attempt, where he's trying to get Israel cursed. And you'll remember that story, how that Balaam got Israel cursed, but not in any mystic way. He got them cursed by convincing them to sin, and he knew that God would punish them for their sin. And so he says, I've not sinned against you, but you've wronged me by fighting against me. May the Lord judge the judge render judgment this day between the children of Israel and the people of Ammon. And the people of Ammon didn't listen. And Jephthah made this this vow that comes up. And Freddie's going to tell you all about it and answer any questions you have about this vow that Jephthah makes. So anything you might not understand about the vow Jephthah makes and what he carries out, Freddie will have all the answers on Wednesday night. Freddie said he's going to be sick like I am. So Jephthah, he made a vow to the Lord. And notice verse 30, what the vow says of Judges chapter 11. If you will indeed deliver the people of Ammon into my hands, then it will be that whatever comes out of the doors of my house to meet me when I return in peace from the people of Ammon shall surely be the Lord's, and I will offer it as a burnt offering. So Jephthah advanced toward the people of Ammon to fight against them, and the Lord delivered them into his hands, and he defeated them from Aroer as far as Minnith, and so forth. There was a very great slaughter, and the people of Ammon were subdued before the children of Israel. So that's what I had to cover, and I'm a little ahead of time. I mean, I don't have a lot of time left. I don't have any material left, and I've got 5 to 7 minutes of time left.
Bring this observation back. That's interesting. That when God speaks to them, so they recognize another God in the land. Counterintuitive, it seems kind of curious thing.
Yeah.
And I went with the day.
Yeah. Now I think that's a very good observation and really spot on. It's easier. I'm sure it was easier to serve those gods than it would have been to serve the God of Jehovah. Yes. Yeah. And I think that goes also with our tendency to, in times of ease, to forget about God and to forget. But during times of desperation, you know, we're suddenly praying. And in times of ease, we tend to, in the parallel today, we would tend to trust on the things we have, our material blessings, and we would tend to lean upon those things and forget the temporal nature of this world we live in. And the New Testament clearly makes that parallel between idolatry of the Old Testament and covetousness or materialism today. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You had something? Yeah, very good point. Totally agree. Totally agree. That was interesting. I hadn't really noticed that again. But yeah, one thing I hope I haven't done is cast Jephthah in an unfavorable light, because while he did have those worthless men working for him, you're right. That's oftentimes who goes to war. And I think particularly here in these chapters, and you know, his deep concern to fulfill the vow he had made, no matter how painful it was to him. I think Jephthah is definitely an admirable character in the Bible. His knowledge of the history, and even when he's arguing with his brothers, I mean, he is clearly on the right side of that argument. You know, what, now you want me? You know, he has a legitimate disagreement with his brothers, and has a legitimate and also he's wise in that he knows that his brothers would dupe him if they could. They would take him back, get their use out of him, and then send him back to Tob. And Jephthah wants some assurance. And notice who that oath was made before. Who did Jephthah call on for that oath that he made there in Mizpah? He stated those words before the Lord. So I certainly hope that in saying he had worthless men, but that I haven't cast Jephthah in a negative light. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Very good. Very good. Very good. That's all I had to cover, and we've got like maybe 1 minute left, and this has not ever happened to me. And perhaps if I were a little more above the weather instead of under it. Charles? Absolutely. Very good. Thanks all for your comments and help.